Hey, deep fried fans. Have you ever had a fried banana pepper? A little heat and a little grease, what's not to like? This is Ellie Mae here to announce show number 19, recorded live at the Professional Developer Conference in October of 2008. Okay, deep fried fans, grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Gumpology.
Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Deep Fried Bites. What's up, Mr. Woody?
Hey, not too much. How about you, Keith?
Doing good. We are still doing shows from PDC. We've got a lot of shows to cover.
We do. We do have a lot of shows. We had a lot of very cool people that we met and sat down with.
So today we got a little treat for everybody. We got two segments really from PDC. One's going to be a short segment, and then another one longer that we sat down and talked about C# today. But before we get into the shows, we wanted to kind of give you some updates on some things. We've had a lot of people email us and send us comments and things, so we wanted to bring a few things up there with that. We had Gerhard Weiss sent us an email and said that, you know, on our website, we should fix the all shows link out there because we're going from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 instead of going from the last show up. So we went into the graffiti templates and we customized that. Now they're showing up from the last show down to the bottom. So you can go out and check that
out. That's nice. So
that's a good.
Great suggestion. Keep them up.
We also got a comment on the site from Irvin Koch, who had listened to the link talk with Jim Woolley that we did. And I think that was that episode 14, Woody? I think maybe.
It was around back then.
It was around somewhere in there. Anyway, you can find it on the website. Anyway, so we did a whole episode with Jim Woolley about link, and Irvin's like, you guys should do another episode. You know, because there were some announcements that came out that link to SQL is dead for the most part. And just to clarify that, you know, link to SQL is not really dead. It's just the team isn't really moving it forward at this point. And, of course, they're going to take feedback from the community. So if you if you're, you know, made investments in that technology and want to see something done with it, then I would suggest you to connect with the teams at Microsoft and, you know, express your opinions on that. We are going to be sitting down with the team and discussing link to SQL in a future show, so stay tuned for that. Somebody else that emailed us was Morton Schmidt. He said, you know what, you need to have a master feed. I subscribed to your show. He just located us, and he said he only got the last 10 episodes. He wasn't able to get all of them, and we are currently working on that, Morton. We use a system called Graffiti, and it doesn't display all of the items in the feed. And we were contacting the graffiti team, and I know some of them actually out there listen to the show. So if you can help us out with that or know how to create a plugin for graffiti to return all of the items for a particular category in a feed, please let us know. We'd certainly love some help with that. All right, Woody, so we sat down with a gentleman named Jason McConnell, who is the product marketing manager for Surface, which is that really cool technology that had a lot of buzz at PDC. And we did a little short segment with him, and I wish we could have sat down with him longer, you know?
Yeah, I know. He was an interesting guy. Had a very cool. All the Surface stuff was very cool out there. So I really enjoyed talking to him just for the few minutes that we had him.
Yeah, I sat down just by myself for about 30 minutes one day and just sat down and just kind of play with every app on there. And it's amazing how natural that it feels. You know, whenever you touch the actual surface and you click on things, and you're moving like the pictures and you're blowing them up and kind of slinging them around, it really feels really natural. I mean, the physics that they brought into that are really cool, you know.
Yeah, so there was a secret surface that a lot of people weren't really paying attention to, and that was, I think, was out at the Geeks with Blogs booth. They had a surface that you could usually, most of the time, you could walk right up to and play around with for a little while before someone else came up and wanted to use it. So that's where I kind of played around with the surface.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go to Jason's, and then we'll come back and we'll get into some C# stuff. So here we go, folks. We're going live to PDC with Jason McConnell. So, folks, the next person we found is Jason McConnell. He's with Microsoft out of Redmond, and he's on the Microsoft Surface team. Jason, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
We're doing great. We're just kind of walking around finding people. We bumped into you over here at the Surface booth. Tell us about Surface and kind of what kind of responses are you getting out here?
Cool. Surface is our first foray into sort of touch computing. So we've actually got an incredible piece of hardware that has a vision-based system inside of it that looks up at what's going on top of Surface and then projects an image from a computer basically up onto the underside of the Surface itself, and then it interacts with people's hands or with objects that you place on Surface or with any sort of device as well, and it actually tracks what you're doing on top of Surface. It's very cool.
And I know one of the applications you're running this week is Scavenger Hunt. Can you kind of tell a little bit about that? That's kind of interesting. I like how you guys use the cards and everything.
Right. We have these things called identity tags, which are like 128-bit unique IDs that are on the back of each one of these cards. We're handing them out to anyone who would like a T-shirt, basically. They need to then we've put Surface in four different locations around the PDC event. They need to go and place the tag down on the Surface. We then associate their tag ID into a database with what photos they've found. They basically need to match up eight photos with their card. Once they've matched up all eight photos, they bring it back to us, and they win a T-shirt.
So what's the technologies that you guys developed Scavenger Hunt in?
It's the Surface SDK is all based on the .NET framework and WPF. So we've used WPF to do this. We use Visual Studio as the development IDE. And then we used our own SDK to build the application up. And then it's all connected actually using WCF, the Windows Communication Foundation stuff. So we're pumping messages around to each machine. They're storing it locally on a SQL Express database. And then we're doing all the synchronization towards on a peer-to-peer based network.
Like, there's a lot of people gathered around. Folks can't see right now, but everybody's got their cards out, and they're all slapping them down and going from station to station. It's pretty cool. What do most people think about their first experience with Surface?
Well, they're pretty wild. You know, when there's one person using it, someone is hesitant to go up and do anything else. But, in fact, it's a multi-user computer. This is what people have difficulty understanding. They don't want to interrupt what the other person's doing, because on a PC, if you come and start messing around with someone's Internet Explorer browser or something, you'll get them pretty annoyed. Whereas here, you can throw multiple cards down. You can all look around from a 360-degree aspect. It's multi-user, so you can have multiple people looking for photos and matching them up to their Scavenger Hunt card. So I think they're wowed by the fact that four or five people can all be doing this at the same time, and that the Surface is kind of gorgeous. You know, it's got this really nice glow to it, and people get drawn to it in a very intimate way. I think it's very social.
So I heard earlier that MSNBC is using Surface technology in their broadcast. Can you explain a little bit about that, how they're using it?
Yep, absolutely. Their analyst, financial analyst, their political analyst, a guy called Chuck Todd, who's a man who knows all the numbers, who knows all the different ways the states get broken up and all the different electoral seats. He's using Surface as a way to kind of tell the daily story of how the campaign's going from both sides. So he uses Surface and then talks into the camera. And it's a really natural way for him to do it. Rather than having to turn around and use a whiteboard or turn his back to the audience, he can simply look down, and the camera's kind of looking down on Surface as well. He can draw and annotate. So he's highlighting areas that are really hot political areas on the current day, and he's then selling that into the audience. So he's basically telling the political story every day using Surface.
Cool. Now tell us how much it costs to buy one of these bad boys over here.
They're available to companies. So if you're a development company or a software dev house like an ISV, you could buy the SDK version. They normally retail, or they normally sell for $15,000. We sell directly at the moment. We've got a show special for $13,500 for the developer unit. Now the developer unit comes with not only the hardware, but also some online training and five copies of the SDK, which is available to developers to build apps, not just on Surface, but they can install the SDK on their PC and use a simulator so that if they can't physically get access to Surface, they can still continue their development and wait for their Surface machine to free up.
Very, very cool. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking some time out today and talking to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Very, very cool to hear about Surface. Jason, thanks again.
Thank you very much, guys.
Well, again, folks, that was Jason McConnell from the Surface team. I hope you enjoyed that. I can't believe that the thing cost $15,000, Woody, still. I mean, that would still shock me, to be honest.
I know, but I think they pretty much make them at a one-time cost, so I don't think they're actually mass-producing them. So maybe once they mass-produce them, and maybe the price will come down.
Yeah, I mean, you got cameras in there and stuff, but you also have got, just really standard PC equipment. It's dual core processors and, a standard video card and stuff like that. I actually went over and asked one other guy. I said, what hardware is in here? So it's really just standard PC hardware, but that top part is probably that you actually touch. The actual Surface part is really probably what costs a lot of money to make. So, yeah, in the future, that stuff may come down. Well, the main part of the show today, folks, we sat down with Charlie Calvert and Bill Wagner. We discussed some of the future stuff in C# 4.0. Charlie is a community program manager for Microsoft's C# team. He works a lot on outreach and bridge building to both external and internal teams through the web and live events. Charlie has a degree in journalism and computer science from Evergreen State College, and he's been the author of 10 technical books, and he sold over 100,000 copies. So Charlie is definitely a brain when it comes to this stuff. We also have Bill Wagner, who's a co-founder of SRT Solutions. He's developed commercial software for the past 20 years. Bill is a regional director and a Microsoft MVP, and he's been a contributing editor on the editorial board and columnist for over a decade. His recent book came out, More Effective C#, just was released about a month or so ago. And Bill's a great friend of ours out of the Michigan area. So let's go back to PDC. We're going to sit down with Charlie and Bill and talk about some of the futures of C# 4.0. We hope you enjoy. Thanks for tuning in today. We're sitting out here live, folks, at PDC on the floor of the expo, talking to some C# gurus. We got Mr. Bill Wagner with us. Bill, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Keith?
I'm doing great. And then we got Mr. Charlie Calvert from Microsoft. Charlie, how are you?
I'm really good, Keith. Thanks.
Good to see you again.
Yeah.
So. All right. So let's get into some C# stuff here. And both of you got books out. Bill just had his book come out.
Yes, I did, Keith. Thank you very much. I had More Effective C#, which was available in print about 2 weeks before PDC. So some people here are picking it up and talking to me about different items that I discussed in that, about working with C# 2, C# 3, and the kind of things you can do with it, and the shifts in the language and the things that they've built there. So this is a lot of fun to write and a lot of fun to meet people that are interested in what I've done and talk to them about how they're using the language and the kind of things they want to see in the future.
How'd your book signing go earlier?
Actually, it was fun. It was probably less than we might have had because the keynotes, with so much stuff that Microsoft was releasing, the keynotes ran long. So they were still going on for the first part of it. So I could kind of tell exactly when Don and Chris finished, when a few more people started to show up.
Right.
Good.
And Charlie's got a book out, too, called Essential Link. It's going to be coming out, available early 2009. Tell us about your book, Charlie.
Yeah, it's an overview of Link. It gives you a good sense of everything that's going on with Link. We describe the syntax. What are the new features in C# 3.0 that help to enable Link? How do they fit together to make Link possible? Then we go into Link to Objects, describing IEnumerable of T. You know, we talked about lambdas. We talked about expression trees. We talk about extension methods, all the different features. Then we talk about linked objects, give people some sense of how that's put together and done it. Then Dinesh Kulkarni, who was the PM who created Link to SQL, actually takes over and writes the Link to SQL chapters. And so he writes 3 or 4, does a really nice deep dive into that material and describes that. And then I come back and do a Link to XML, and we kind of wrap it up. Then and Dinesh adds one last chapter at the end, a patterns and practices chapter. We needed something like that for the to give people a sense of how you use Link. You know, there's a whole lot of questions of what the best practices are on Link and, you know, what the right things to do with this new technology is. And so he answers a lot of those questions.
Oh, sounds like a good deal. So the big news this at PDC is kind of the advancement of C#.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe give a quick overview of maybe the most exciting things, Charlie, that and Bill, that you guys like about the new what's coming out in C#, maybe in a year or two.
Yeah, it's I work on the compiler team, the C-sharp compiler IDE team. So we're working in language features that are really built right into the compiler. And there's two really primary things that are going on. The major thing here is the dynamic is being added to the language so that you'll be able to call into link to you'll be able to do COM interop much more easily than you could in the past. In the past, you've had to, there was no really good expressive way to call directly into Office from C#. And now you'll be able to do that. You had to pass in a lot of extra parameters. You had to pass in ref types. Made it much very complicated to call Office. You'll be able to do that smoothly. You'll also be able to call into Iron Python and Iron Ruby very smoothly, very easily now, which you haven't had before. There's going to be a whole new layer which will allow you to call in Iron Python and Iron Ruby. We're going to add named and optional parameters, which has been a new switch to the way C# works. In the past, you always had to do overload every method when you wanted to change the parameter count. Now you're going to be able to do named and optional. That was put in there to help with the Office API for COM interop, but you'll be able to use it in any of your code that you want to. And then covariance and contravariance is the last feature. It's bringing to delegates and to interfaces the ability to work with types more smoothly with generic interfaces and generic delegates.
Now, Bill, you never have a lack of opinion, so what do you think about dynamic?
Okay, I actually like it, and I think it was Eric Meyer, and the way he phrases it is strong typing when you can, dynamic when you must. Okay, so if you think about C#, you know, it's a strongly typed static language, right? So there's you get all the benefits of a compiled language. You get the performance. You get the strong typing. You know, you get the IntelliSense, the type inference, and all these things that make us more productive, helps find a class of errors, helps make the compiler and the jitter do some optimizations for us that runtime languages can't do, right? But with the kind of applications we're writing and the things we're doing now, there's times when we have to have this dynamic capability. So now we've, you know, the C# team is adding that. So now we're able to, you know, as Charlie said, write code that works with Python objects, write code that works with Office, works with JavaScript objects, right? If you saw Anders talk or if you saw some of the talks on live services, you can pull live services down from the mesh as JSON objects, right? So they're JavaScript objects. Well, now with dynamic, I can manipulate those directly from C#, which is really cool. And the other side works too. I can create libraries in C# where the parameter types are dynamic, and I can now have a very simple story to say I write code in C# and you can use it in Iron Python and things like that. So there's, it really makes a lot more seamless integration between these different things we have to work with and these different problems we have to solve. So I think it's a fantastic thing. It doesn't mean, you know, just because C# is getting more dynamic doesn't mean it's getting less static, right?
Sure, yeah. Who drove that feature in there? I mean, was it Anders that said?
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. It was the C# team, the same group of people who've really been meeting for 5 or 6, 7, 8 years now,
sure.
Driving it. Anders is in there. Mads Torgerson is in there. Matt Warren's in there. Eric Lippert. Those were the guys who are really driving the language these days. And you can go up on Channel 9 and see some interviews with that team, actually, and watch
them. Yeah, I have seen their interviews. And I like how they do bring, every once in a while, they bring a new person in to get fresh perspective.
Yeah.
And so those we'll put a link in our show notes out to those Channel 9 talks.
Yeah, there's that dynamic object idea. There's a new type in the language now called iDynamic object. And with iDynamic object, if you descend from that, then your class will be dynamic. It's no longer strongly typed. And so there's an interesting example, actually, that you can download right now from Code Gallery. There we have a place where you can download C# future on Code Gallery. If you go to code.msdn.com and then put at the end of that URL /C#future, you'll be able to download this example, which shows how to use that iDynamic object type. And what it does is it reads in an XML file. And it puts the nodes, the different elements in the XML file into a dictionary along with the values that are associated with it. So then you create this iDynamic object, and you can write the names of the fields of the XML object, you know, the different XML elements in there, say, you know, like dot first name or dot last name, and set it equal to some value. It goes and calls the dynamic object, which looks up the name of the field in this dictionary that you got, and then goes and assigns that to that particular node of the XML tree. So it's just an example of the kind of cool things you can do with dynamic code, that all of a sudden you don't have to have particular method names declared ahead of time, so you can build things dynamically. It's cool.
It is nice.
And there's another neat side effect of it, too. You know, if you work with anonymous types at all, you realize that they can't move very far. You know, they're local to a particular method, and you can't return them out of a method unless you're going to just treat them generically. You can't pass them to other methods unless you're going to treat them generically and do things. Well, as it turns out, one of the neat features of the way iDynamic Object is implemented for object bindings is if I write a method and I say it takes a dynamic object, I can pass anonymous methods to it. And as long as it happens to have that, the properties or the methods that I want to use inside that particular function, it just works because it's a dynamic dispatch. So you kind of get this duck typing now in C#, where anonymous types can go out to these methods that just happen to expect things with a certain name.
So for the line of business developer, how is this going to change the way they do stuff, you think?
Well, I think that the biggest win for the average developer who's out there just trying to get work done is the calling into office. That in the past, we really had a poor story for C# developers who wanted to call into office. There's all these office methods that take 10, 12, 20 different parameters, and you had to call every single one because C# was a strongly typed language. Now you can use this named and optional thing, and if you only want to use two of the parameters, you can ignore the other 18, let the default values go through, and just specify the two you want, which makes your Office, Outlook, these kind of applications go much more quickly. So that would be a huge thing.
Used to, you would call in and you'd have like, no, 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 no.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Just going on forever.
Type
there was
dot
a
missing,
type
missing. Type dot missing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was crazy. And then also people might want to work with Iron Python or Iron Ruby. Sometimes there's scenarios, or even more classically, I think another great scenario here is working, and Bill was talking about this earlier, if you're working with Silverlight, everything in the background, a lot of it's written in JavaScript. And so JavaScript now is a dynamic language which you can call from inside of C# directly. So you just initialize this JavaScript object, and then you can literally start pasting JavaScript code directly into your C# and have the debugger, the editor, all the powerful tools for working with that.
And we saw a demo of that here. Like, yeah. Anders really took JavaScript and then just pasted it over, and voila.
And then just started editing, changing a few of the keywords, and off it went. It was really quite nice.
Yeah.
So when are we going to see all this new stuff? Is this out in the hard drives that they passed out today?
It is indeed, yeah. You would be able to do these things with the stuff that's on the hard drives. You might want to download the samples from that C# future site that I was talking about to help you do it, or look for the walkthroughs that are come with the CTP. And also, you can download the CTP from the website. It is available if you went to downloads.microsoft.com. If you go anywhere to the C#.net and went to the main page of the C# Center, we would point you to the CTP and let you download it. Yeah.
So that's dynamic. The other feature we talked about were
named and optional parameters. Yeah, the named and optional parameters is meant really for this com interop story to let people be able to do it more easily. But in the past now, if you ever wanted to have optional number of parameters running against the C# code, you overloaded the method. And, you know, the first one would have one parameter, the second one, two parameters. And you ended up sometime with this story in your C# code where you had 20 or 30 overloads, you know, of one particular one, which could be complicated. Now you'll be able to have named and optional parameters so that you can, all you have to do is declare the parameter the way you used to and then have it say equal some default value, and suddenly it'll become named and optional, and you can call them only with the names that you want to for those parameters.
Right. So, and I think as Charlie says, that means fewer times when you have to create multiple overloads for different methods, because now you can implement it just once and yet give client code more convenient ways to call this, right? Just leave off the ones you don't need and let them specify different things. So that's less code to maintain, a little bit easier to look at and read and see the developer's intent. So I think that's also going to help, especially as, you know, since C# has been around now, there's more just huge, massive projects out there. So the bigger the code base is, the more we want this kind of a terseness, but still a lot of readability, so I can really see what somebody was intending when I'm looking at their code.
And, you know, a lot of people will do, if they have a lot of overrides for one method, they'll have like, I'll say like the smallest one, mm-hmm. and then they'll build up to the to the biggest one with the most parameters at the bottom. So they'll have this one call that one, and this one call that one, and that one call that one, and that one call that one. And that's a lot of curly braces and a lot of extra documentation
gets,
and everything.
And eventually it gets a little brittle, right? Because, oh, I forgot when I added some other parameter someplace, I forgot to change the calling sequence somewhere, and now something doesn't work right, blah, blah, blah.
And then the other one is covariance and contravariance, which is an interesting feature, too. It's really covariance and contravariance is really something that should have always worked inside the language. It's this idea that when you're working with delegates or you're working with interfaces, if you're passing in their generic types, so it's a question of what delegate you can assign to another delegate or what interface you can assign to another interface. And you would expect, suppose you have a type like animals and you've got a descendant class like a cat. So you would think that if you created a delegate that returned a cat, that you could assign it to any delegate that was returning animals, since a cat is a type of animal. And in fact, when you're using regular code, non-generic code, if it's not, you know, a delegate, non-generic delegate, you can, in fact, make that kind of assignment. But when you make a delegate, you cannot actually make that kind of assignment in Orcus, for instance, in the previous version. And now you will be able to do this. You annotate your code slightly. You put in a little new keyword called in or out on those type definitions for the type parameters that you pass in, and all of a sudden that was covariance example that I just showed you will start working. Again, we have an example of that going up there. Contravariance the other way around, and has to do with passing parameters in, and it kind of makes your head hurt a little bit because then you're assigning an animal to a cat and it feels like something big is being assigned to something smaller and it shouldn't work. But actually, since only cats can be passed into that delegate, of course, that's a type of animal, so the assignment should work, but it just doesn't feel that intuitive to you, right, when you first look at it.
So, and so what happens here is then, if it's, because everything's reference-based, if inside that method, then you went and assigned one of those cat arrays to some, say, a turtle, which compiles because the parameter type was animal, well, now suddenly you get a runtime error. So this is shows that C-sharp is really not losing any of its static typing and any of its strong typing, because now what these features actually do is the compiler is now able to find these errors that previously would be runtime errors or compile time errors, depending on whether it was arrays or generics, right? So in the generic case, it didn't compile. In the array case, you get a runtime error if you do something like that. So I think that's also another one of those features where, because you can annotate your code and say this is in, this is out, this is both, developers get the chance to say, here's what I mean when I write this method. So you can communicate to the people using your code better exactly what you mean and your intent, which makes it harder to misuse and easier to get right. And then we all get to go home earlier.
Get to go home early.
I like that part.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm all about cutting out early on Friday for sure. That's for definitely.
So I have a question for each one of you guys beyond C sharp. What the last 2 days, what's the thing that has impressed you the most and blown your socks off?
Okay, I actually really like Azure, I'm not sure exactly, they pronounced it three different ways in the keynotes, but I think it's Azure, the cloud services platform, where now it really is a fundamental shift. Instead of thinking about, you know, scaling things out to the enterprise and how many machines and how much web farms and replication and all this stuff, if it lives up to the promise in the keynotes especially, we'll be able to think in terms of services and in terms of storage somewhere, and tying all these things together. And I think that's just a huge shift that is amazing. And in fact, what was really weird when I was sitting there, since I'm an Illinois grad in the Midwest, I used Plato, which was the one that Ray Ozzie worked on when he was at school at Illinois, you know, in terms of this whole massive system to try to get all this collaboration between different students and different things. So it's amazing to see this thing now. I saw it more than 20-some years ago, and to see where that vision keeps going through some of the different things he's done, and now, you know, with the really smart people here being able to fulfill some of that with this vision of Azure and the things that we can do with the cloud, I think that's just as exciting as anything I've seen in a long time.
I'm a lost cause because I'm here and I'm always over in the booth, you know, doing this, so I don't go to all the talks, but certainly Azure is important. I think the two things I'm most excited about is the F#, which other members in my area are working on, and people are very excited about that language. It's a new functional language that we're developing. And if for people who did a little Link programming, it's very similar to Link. It's functional. It's uses a lot of type inference. It's a lot of immutability in it. A lot of people who are very heavily into doing mathematical calculations, particularly financial, a lot of the big banks in New York and so on are using, have been adopting F-sharp fairly quickly. But anytime you've got a heavily computational type of work, you often find that F-sharp has got that kind of expressiveness that you can't find in an object-oriented language, and that you might find it. I think one of the rules of thumb that I've seen people use is that if you're playing around with objects and all of a sudden you find you're fighting them, fighting the objects that you're working with, sometimes you might find, well, just try it in F-sharp and see if it works more cleanly. And F-sharp's going to run on .NET also. It's also, and it works inside the Visual Studio IDE, so you can add it to your C-sharp project. So you may find, hey, I want to write some of my code in C-sharp, and now I can add in a few modules written in F-sharp to do that. That's certainly an exciting thing. And the other exciting thing is just before I came down here, I got Bill's book, which is always a very exciting thing to get in the mail, because Bill's
Bill's
definitely got the quintessential C-sharp book right out there right now. You have to read all the chapters if you don't feel comfortable being in the C-sharp world.
Thank you, Charlie. Yeah. That's, you're giving me a big head again, but thank you very much.
We'll try to get him out the door later.
Yeah.
So F-sharp, real quick, did that affect, did that language kind of draw new ideas into C-sharp?
Not really at this time. I mean, I think that the mood around which Link was created, because Link really is a very functional language. It's got that same idea to it. And so I think that it was taking place there. And in fact, the guy who drove, who was the PM for the compiler for Link, you know, on the C-sharp team, is now the guy who's the PM running F-sharp. So there was a direct legacy there. They just had this interest in it. F-sharp was really something that was developed in MSR research and has been building up here for some time. But right now, there's not a huge amount of new ideas coming in other than what was in Link.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, guys, I think they're going to be kicking us out soon. So I know we all have places to go and things to do. So I really appreciate you guys coming on with us and sharing some new ideas and new stuff coming out in C-sharp.
Thank you very much for having us, Chris and Keith.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. And for, you know, again, watch for Charlie's book coming out. It's called Essential Link, coming out in 2009. Bill's book just hit the shelves the last week or so, and that's called
More Effective C Sharp.
So grab those books. These guys are some of the best in the business to learn from. So we certainly appreciate it, guys. Appreciate everybody coming on to the show and taking your time out to listen for this evening. And until next time, keep your tea glasses full and your axes sharp. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.